With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Candidate for district attorney of Fulton County and current sitting district attorney, Paul Howard Jr. Paul Howard, how are you?
Hey, Derek, I am fine, man. Glad to be here with you today.
All right, let's get straight to it. I will say to you now, we extend you the same thing. We're on from 5 to 7, or we can do an hour, we got a series of questions, so it's on you.
All right. Well, let's go till you get tired of me.
All right. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Paul. Tell us about your curriculum vitae. Where'd you go to school? Where you born and raised? Introduce yourself for those in our audience who may not know you.
Okay. Well, listen, I just want to tell folks I'm from a little place called Midville, Georgia, and that community really started me on my journey to become a DA and prosecutor. When I was about 14 years old, I had an opportunity to sit in on a trial that involved two African-American men. And during the trial, they were referred to by the N-word. I was in the courtroom with some of my classmates, had never heard it. We were amazed that people could say it in court. And I made the promise to myself then that I wanted to do something that so that I could make sure that other people would not be humiliated in court as those two men were. So I decided I wanted to become a prosecutor. So I attended college at Morehouse, started when I was 15, and graduated from Morehouse, attended Emory University's School of Law, graduated in 1976, and started working for the city of Atlanta as a deputy, as an assistant solicitor under Mary Welcome. Worked for a year or so as the assistant solicitor, and I was appointed as deputy solicitor. And I left the city in 1982 and became an assistant DA in Fulton County under the DA at that time, who was Lewis Slayton. Worked until 1988, and in 88 I ran for Fulton County Solicitor General. That's the misdemeanor prosecutor. And Derek, I lost that election, so I went into private practice for about 4 years. Had a great time in private practice, but I decided to come back because I thought the best way, again, to help my community was to serve as a prosecutor. So in 92, ran for the same office, was elected Solicitor General in 92, and then in 96, I made the decision to run for Fulton County District Attorney. That was a momentous decision because in the state of Georgia, we had never had an elected African-American District Attorney. So I ran, and on November the 4th of 1996, I was elected as the first African-American District Attorney in the state of Georgia, in Georgia's whole 242-year history. So when I started as district attorney, as many of your audience might remember, our county then was just really beset with crime. We were known as the murder capital of the South. We had about 187 homicides annually, and people were pleading that something be done about this violence. And so when I ran, I had made a very simple promise to the community, and that promise was to reduce the violence, and that's what I've been doing. Since I've been in office, the violent crime rate in Atlanta has dropped by 70%, and some people think that just happens because of the passage of time. That's not true, because DeKalb County, our neighbor, since I've been in office, the homicide rate in DeKalb County has, in fact, gone up by 78%. But we also reduced overall crime by 62%. And one of the other things that troubled people back in 1997 was our jail population. We had more than 4,800 inmates in the Fulton County Jail. It was a jail built for 2,500. We had mounds of people sleeping on the floor, most of them being young black men. And so we started a process in my office called a complaint room. It's a screening process for felony cases. We started speeding up the process of charging people in Fulton County. And we were able to reduce the jail population from 4,800 to 2,400, cutting the population in half and saving taxpayers about $50 million in annual cost. Since I've been DA, we have expanded the purpose of the DA's office. For most of the DAs, they see their purposes as being holding people accountable for crime. Well, we expanded that focus to include making our community a safer place to live by developing crime prevention programs. And so we've developed a number of programs, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about those some later. And Derek, the other thing that I hope we'll get a chance to talk about is that I've made the decision now to create a third prong in the DA's office, and I hope we'll have an opportunity to talk about those things.
We're going to let you wrap it up. We got a number of questions. One of the charges, Paul, the people said that is being leveled at you is that you created a hostile work environment for women, and that there's a culture of lack of respect for women in your office. How do you answer that? And also, the second part of that is, what roles hold, or that leadership position that women hold in your office of any significance?
Well, I really appreciate you asking me that question, because when I started as district attorney, there were very few African-American females and very few women who were prosecutors. In fact, I believe I could count them on, my fingers, the numbers that worked in the DA's office and in the state. Well, since that time, right now, 65% of my staff is now female. And I want to repeat that, 65%. But I think that the thing that is most critical, I think it's one thing to just work at a place, but I think it's also important that you are assigned to some significant supervisory roles. And 84% of the supervisors in my office are female. The other thing that we've done in the DA's office, we created the first in the state a crimes against women and children's unit. It's a prosecutorial unit that focuses upon crimes that involve women and children. We've already also created a sex trafficking squad. Also in the DA's office, we've got a cold case rape kit squad in the DA's office that we're really proud of. We, in fact, been looking back at a number of cases where the rape kits were held for some reason in Grady Hospital, and for some of them for as long as 10 years. We received $1 million grant. We've been looking back at some of those old cases. And in fact, the last one we completed, the suspect who was convicted had assaulted about 14 women. I believe that the thing that also says something about females in our office is when you look at people who leave the DA's office, and right now we have 43 people who've left the DA's office and become judges all across the country, two of them federal judges, and most of those have been female. We've got three elected prosecutors in the state of Georgia, and I believe that that two of those are women or females as well. So I believe that our record with respect to women is outstanding. And I guess the thing, Derek, that people always say to me, apparently my opponent thought that it was a good place for women because she stayed there for 16 years.
All right, look, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll tackle a couple of some more subjects and get your opinion on it. 404-892-2703. We'll be back. It's District Attorney Paul Howard. We'll be back in a moment. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WL. Attorney is locked in a heated re-election, and as we say, we gonna ask. He said, "Got time, and we got questions." So we'll let him pontificate a little bit about his answers. Paul, one of the things that many of us were critical of you and the DA's office was the prosecution of the Atlanta teachers. Many of us felt that it was too much. It was RICO statute. It was overkill. Talk about that. Are you proud of your prosecution of the teachers? And there's also an allegation that you tried to double back and offer them some secret deal recently. Can you speak to that as well?
Yeah. Derek, what we did and what we did at the time, we felt, and I felt, that it was certainly the right thing to do. I think one of the things that I've learned, though, is I believe that I should have spent more time talking to the community about what we did and talking to the community about how we did it. But the thing that happened, the fact, the data that we proceeded around was the 256,000 answers that were changed from wrong to right. And it's strange that when I talk about this case, that many people aren't aware of the 256,000 answers that were changed. And the fact that after the process was investigated in 2009, when the testing was put in charge of the state rather than the school system, the number of wrong to right answers dropped to, I believe, somewhere around 100. So that large number was not created by inadvertence, but it was intentional. And the evidence showed that the reason that it happened was not for the benefit of the children, but for the benefit of administrators and teachers who profited by receiving money as well as being able to keep their positions. And what I have tried to explain to people that this was not, again, just two or three people who decided to make the changes, but it was a school system-wide connection or conspiracy to change those scores to hide some of the shortcomings of the school system. And hiding those shortcomings, what they ended up doing is crippling young people in our community. So the message that I wanted to send by this prosecution was to let the school system know that their testing system was flawed, that they needed to make some changes so that our kids had an accurate gauge of how they were progressing. And I believe at this time we have our message has been sent, and I think it's been received. Yeah. The school system has changed. They've got a new synergy, new administration. So that is why, Derek, we've been dealing with this for about 11 years. And, you know, you and I fussed about it. There are a lot of people about it. So my thought was maybe now is a good time. I thought that maybe this is the time for us to put it aside and move forward. So I had some discussions with, I believe, the defendants who are presently getting rid of appeal.
I don't know. We got, Paul, your phone's going in and out. I don't know. We got a bad connection or you moved. If you moved, if you can move back where you were because it's choppy.
Okay.
And it's,
can you
hear me? Yeah.
I had meetings with six of the teachers, and what they offered was to accept the verdicts, which was an important part of what we were talking about.
And you're talking about this been recent?
That's correct. They wanted to accept the verdicts, and they asked to be re-sentenced so that they would not receive any more probation or any kind of jail time.
But, Paul, believe that that would – the sheer appearance of that during a very heated re-election would appear like it was, you know, it just doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I really told them that I thought it was the right thing to do. I was not trying to do it to gain any ground because I was hoping that it would not even be publicized because I thought it we were doing it simply for the right reason. I really found it tragic that they blamed it on Christian Smith that, you know, we were somehow making a trade, but it was not the reason. Derek, you know, I've had people ever since that conviction for people to come in and talk to me about those defendants. And when they decided that they wanted to accept the verdicts, and they weren't asking that the verdicts be dismissed. They were simply saying that they wanted to not have any probation. So, you know, I'm still the district attorney. I'm not, I'm still actively running the district attorney's office. And I thought it was the good time to do it. It's just interesting that the attorney who made the big stink about it, I think his name is Bob Rubin, who is the attorney who represents the defendants in the Ahmed case down in Glenn County. And it's just kind of crazy that one of the defendants was his own in the Atlanta Public School case. He's representing one of these defendants, and I guess he thought that it was better for him to try to harm Paul Howard and Christian Smith than to help his own client. I don't agree with that. But I do believe, I talked with Andy Young and other people in our community about it. As you know, Ambassador Young was one of the people asking for probated sentences that we offered right after the verdict. And so actually what these six defendants were talking about is exactly what we had offered them after the verdict several years ago. So we would have reached the same result, but it has taken a long time to get there. And I just thought it was the right thing to do.
But you're comfortable with the prosecution. You didn't think losing their job, losing their teaching profession, having to mortgage homes and everything was significant enough, and you were comfortable with the prosecution.
Yeah, and this is the reason why. What we asked them to do was simply accept responsibility. We had a number of teachers who were aware of the cheating, Derek, and they did not cheat. They said they would not take any part in it, and they refused to do it. The people that came forward as witnesses, they came forward, you know, to their own detriment in terms of friendships and careers, but they decided to come forward. And I think it was important for our community that when there's a process, when your own peers and friends are presenting evidence, at some point, I believe it is appropriate to take responsibility. They would not take responsibility, but now, after all of this passage of time, what they're willing to say is, we'll accept the verdict. And so I believe that indicates that our decision was the appropriate one.
All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to go to the controversial shooting where you from the police union to perhaps the mayor and others have said this prosecution, charging of Officer Ralph, Officer Bronson is nothing but purely politics. You got 17 other files of police shootings or police misconduct on your desk. You've done nothing with those. And so you all of a sudden charge these two officers. And we're going to ask you on the other side of the break why.
All right.
Does politics have anything to do with it? And what drove your decision to make that decision? Don't go into place. Paul Howard, we invited him, and he came. And so we'll come back and let him answer some more of these questions. Don't go into place. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK. Howard, he is the district attorney of Fulton County. Have been for 24 years, I believe it is now. And running for re-election, locked in a very difficult and tight re-election race. Paul, you know, everybody watched the Rashad Brooks shooting. Many of us believe this young brother was murdered. you know, it was just murder. The city reacted, but they said what you're doing is worse because what you're doing is playing politics, that a GBI investigation is underway. You could have waited or should have waited for the GBI to investigate this case. You didn't do it because you just want to take political advantage of the situation. How do you answer your critics on that issue? The early issuing arrest warrants and having Officer Ralph and Bronson picked up and subsequently now charged, in this facing charges in this case. What do you say to that? This was nothing more than you pandering for votes.
Well, let me just tell you, Derek, I believe that is absolutely untrue. I believe this marks about the 40th case that my office has prosecuted against police officers. We started back in 2005 with a case that, in 2002, with a case I suspect you still remember, Corey Ward,
yes.
Who was shot by the Atlanta police. It was one of the first times in the history of our county that a police officer had been indicted for killing an African-American male. The case was he was given immunity by one of our Fulton County judges, immunity that he did not deserve. He shouldn't have had it. And so we were not able to go forward with that case. But ever since we have done that case, the police union and the police department's position has been that the case was political. So every one of the cases that we've done, we've always had the same comment, rush to judgment, and the case was political. You would expect that we would somehow reach the right speed because the complaint is that, you're taking too long. And then when we do Rashad Brooks, they say, that was too fast. And so you might ask yourself, well, what is the right time and the right speed? Where there is none, because I believe that what the union has said is that we don't want any of these officers prosecuted at all. So I was not surprised at the comments that it was political, because those are always the comments. And what I want people to know, I would have agreed with that comment if we had never prosecuted a case before. Also, it's important to realize that this marks the fourth case that we had asked the Superior Court to issue arrest warrants prior to an indictment. We did it in 2016 in a case involving James Burns, an Atlanta officer who shot an African-American male. We did it in an East Point sexual assault case involving a police officer. His name is Richard Goodine. And we did it in the same way as the case involving the Morehouse and Spelman students. The reason that we were able to do this is because the evidence was available. And I point that out because in many of the cases that we receive, the evidence is not available. We had three eyewitnesses. We had eight associated witnesses. We also had eight videotapes of the incident. So as prosecutors and investigators, we were actually able to sit and look. And that's what we did. We sit and we looked and we made a decision. People talk about the GBI. The GBI conducts an investigation because they are called in by the city of Atlanta. They are not in charge of our process. The DA's office, we have our own investigators, and we've got a separate department, and this is what they do. It's called our public integrity section. This is what they do. They investigate cases like the case involving Rashad Brooks. When the GBI, even when they present their collections of evidence, they don't make recommendations. The recommendation regarding prosecution is made by the district attorney. And this is something that we do as a matter of commonplace in our office. So for our office, this was nothing unusual. Now, one of the things that that I want people to understand is that this whole discussion about the 17 cases is, it just seems so strange because, Derek, you're probably aware that, for instance, with the Atlanta Homicide Department, the clear-up rate is about 60%. So that means, I guess you could say that 40% of their cases are sitting on the desk, I guess, as people say. But, you know, suppose a case happens tonight and they get videotape and the defendant confesses. Do you think that the police would say, well, okay, we can't charge you until we get those other 40%? Of course they wouldn't do it. The other thing that I want people to understand that what we're striving to create in Fulton County is one system of justice, one system of justice for everybody in the county, which would include the police. I don't think that there ought to be a separate system of justice for the police. I don't think there's anyone in our county who would not agree that if the roles had been reversed, if Rayshard Brooks had shot this police officer in the back two times, he would have been arrested the immediately afterwards, and nobody would have said anything about it. I think we are going to have to face the truth. And until we face the truth, we're not going to make any progress in our county. The truth is that since 2019, I'm just talking about 2019, there have been seven people killed by the Atlanta Police Department. All seven of them have been African-American men. I believe what people in our community and all across the country, what they're saying is this has got to stop. And so I believe that as we go forward in the future, that you're going to see prosecutions like Rayshard Brooks. They're going to be done within a reasonable time because I think that people are not going to put up with delays that are in many cases caused by the very people who are complaining. And let me point this out, that Derek, we are still having problems in those other cases because, number one, we don't get body cams and dash cams. The witnesses in these cases are mainly police officers, and those police officers refuse to speak with the DA's office. The documentary, the physical evidence in these cases, we are having to ask for open records requests and subpoenas. For instance, in the case involving Jimmy Acheson, we've already had to file three open records requests and file a subpoena just to get some of the evidence that's necessary to proceed with that matter. So I would hope that maybe what with these complaints coming from the Atlanta Police Department, I hope that that means that this is going to usher in a new spirit of cooperation. And if they do that, it will certainly speed along our process of making a decision in those cases.
You don't expect that to really happen, do you?
Well, it's got to happen. And Derek, I hope that one of the things that I am going to do is I am going to start holding monthly meetings with people in our community along with the family members in each one of these cases. And Derek, we're going to start sitting and talking about what is causing the delays. And I'm hoping that by having a group of citizens that we can go back to the city and we can say to them, hey, guys, what is going on? We've got to do better. We've got to do better all over the country. We've got to realize that this is a problem. I was surprised. I saw a Pew Center survey on how adult African-Americans felt about the police department. And 84% of them thought that they were treated unfairly by the police department. And Derek, what was surprising, they asked white people the same question, and 63% of them agreed that the policemen treated blacks unfairly. With those kinds of numbers, they're problems. And I think that we have got to start making some concrete changes. When you see majority white populations like the city of Portland, they have been, protesting for 55 days. Something is amiss. Something is going on in this country. And I think that we in Atlanta, we got to pay some attention to it.
Have the GBI in the Rayshard Brooks case turned over their findings as of today to you?
They have not. They have not turned over their findings. And
is that standard time frame? Is that a time frame? Is this now we're like almost 2 months, month and a half roughly?
Right. It, I believe it happened on June the 12th. Not received. Yeah.
You moved again somehow. I'll let you answer that on the other side of the break. We got to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Don't go into place. Our special guest is District Attorney Paul Howard. We got more questions when we come back. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK. Talking to Paul Howard. He's the current DA and running for re-election. Paul, we were asking about the officer Ralph Brunson case and kind of getting your decision making around it. You know, people had some concern in terms of the press conferences that were held, saying that perhaps. You know, it's almost borderline misconduct. It does not necessarily, it may make that an appealable issue. You went through a lot of detail kind of describing what happened and the defendants that were involved. Was that necessary?
Derek, I think that it was necessary. I think that that was the kind of transparency that we needed here in this community. I had a chance to speak with Mrs. Miller, Mr. Brooks's wife, Tamika Miller, and her family. And, you know, one of the things that she wanted to know is what happened, as any family would want to know if the father and husband had gotten killed. He had four children there that they were raising. And people in the community wanted to know what happened. As you know, many of the videos that I reviewed were already online. They were already being shown all over the internet. And this is also something, Derek, that was strange that people don't talk about, is that this incident happened on Friday, I believe, late Friday night. And on Sunday, the GBI held a press conference. And as you recall, then the GBI actually displayed one of the videos and explained their theory of the case. I haven't heard anybody criticizing the GBI for doing that. I haven't seen any motions filed against the GBI. So I thought that it was important with respect to transparency, because not only was our community looking at what had gone on, but I think people all across the country, they wanted to know what happened in the Rayshard Brooks case. So I think it was obviously and the right thing to do.
This officer, Ralph, had a shooting in 2015 that we learned about after this shooting. It came to your office, but it came as a set of charges against the man that was shot. The man that was shot he was shot in the stomach, I believe, in stomach region, and stayed in the hospital for a number of days. And then your office, with the police support, tried to charge him with ag assault or something, and the man, but in the incident report, now this 2015, this was 5 years ago, there was no mention of the shooting. And when it came before the judge, she had to ask, the man told, look, these people, they tried to charge me, but these people shot me.
Right.
There was nothing in the incident report that suggested that this guy was shot by Officer Ralph. So much it troubled the judge to the extent she asked, is somebody trying to kill this guy? That case ends up being kind of, well, the guy got probation. I think he ended up getting probation. Are you familiar with this?
Yes, I'm familiar with the case.
What happened? What happened? Well, because maybe if we could have stopped him in 2015, shooting on the windows, this guy may not even have been on the force. Why was this not more thoroughly investigated, vetted by your office to say How did they miss the fact that the report says nothing about a shooting?
Derek, let me tell you this. This is the strange thing, and people find this hard to believe, that under Georgia law, the Atlanta Police Department are not required, they're not required to report a police shooting or other crime committed by the police to the district attorney's office. There's no requirement that they do that. In fact, Councilman Antonio Brimer before the council right now that starts the process of correcting that, but they aren't under a legal obligation to report it. So in many of our cases that are shootings without deaths, incidents, serious beatings, incidents that involve sexual offenses committed by police officers, we often find out about those incidents through other means. One is through defense counsels, sometimes from the victims and the victim's family, and sometimes from the media. And so this is one of those cases where the police officers did not put it in the report that they had shot him. But despite that, our office investigated the case in any respect. We interviewed the young lady who was with Mr. Harris, the person that was shot. We interviewed, in this case, this is one of the few cases that we had that the three officers involved in the shooting actually came forward and testified. Not only that, in this case, it's also rather unusual that we had the body cam from those officers, which indicated exactly what happened. After we reviewed all the evidence in the case, it was our opinion that the incident, as we saw it from the body cams, that the shooting was justified. That he was, in fact, backing a vehicle in the direction. We had some statements made by the young lady that was with him that corroborated what he was doing at the time, might have caused harm to those officers. And so, as I've said, when you're the district attorney, you not only do you have to maintain the courage to charge police officers, but you've also got to have courage when the officers did nothing wrong. You've got to be able to say it. And in this case, that's what we found after an investigation by our office. But it is the fact that that was not mentioned in the report. It is something that we've dealt with before. And I hope legislatively we can finally get this changed.
So you're saying that it is not a requirement that a shooting like that ends up in the report as the evidentiary issue for you to go forward to prosecute or not prosecute the individual. That was nothing unusual that it would have been left out.
It's what I'm saying is, Derek, is that there would have been no legal requirement.
Right.
For them to report it. Wow. And so therefore, in many occasions, we've had them to omit it. And that's why we need the law changed. They need to have to report it, because when they report it, that means that we can start investigating it day one.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
As in this case, as we've had in many others, it is sometime after the incident that the DA's office is notified, which I believe is a huge mistake that causes a lot of subsequent problems.
All right. We got to take a quick break. We'll come back. And we just got a few more questions for you. Be able to let you go.
All right.
Our special guest is District Attorney Paul Howell. He's running for re-election, and what no doubt is a very tight re-election. And when we come back, we have some more questions about campaign finance. And we're going to ask, have you accepted any contributions from any other lawyers who are part of any of these police officer cases? And if so, why don't you see that as a conflict of interest? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Don't go into place. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK. We're on with District Attorney Paul Howard. Let's go back to the questions. Paul, I asked you, and I think your phone was breaking up. You said you had not, as of today, you had not received a GBI report as it relates to the Rayshard Brooks case.
That's correct.
I have not. Okay.
That's correct.
All right. And And let's talk about campaign contribution. Have you or your campaign accepted any contributions from any of the lawyers representing any of the defendants in the police shootings or any other police misconduct cases? And do you see that as a conflict of interest?
And Derek, I hope that we'll have time to talk about the police unions and something that happened during a debate last night. And I hope that you would alert me as the time so we would get a chance to discuss that.
Look, I have until 7 o'clock. That's what I reserved for your opponent, and she elected to because that was another event. But I So I got until 7, and it's 6:08 now. So you can use all of that, or we can end it early because I only have a couple more questions. I heard something about the well, you go ahead. We'll get to the Zoom because I heard the Zoom got very exciting at some point.
Well, I want to mention the what had happened regarding the contributions, and I think that there are three separate lawyers that the it involves. One of the lawyers, whose name is Don Samuel, he represents Brosnan. Who is the second officer in the Brayshard Brooks case. Don Samuels made a contribution to my campaign. However, he made it before he represented Brosnan. He made it before the incident took place.
So he had not been retained at the time he made an early contribution. And
that's different from Noah Pines, who represents Roth. He made a contribution before, but the records indicate that after he was retained and after Roth was arrested, he, after that period, made an additional contribution of $1,000 to Fannie Willis. And many people have said to Fannie Willis, since you know that he was representing Roth, why won't you just give the money back? And they have not... you know, rather than to deal with that question, they've tried to use a lot of justifications, and usually the justifications switch to me, but they won't answer that question. Yeah. Isn't that a basic conflict? Because you're receiving money from someone who is on what should be the opposite side of you in a investigation of a police, but maybe they don't see it as being on the opposite side.
Well, we could ask you the converse question. Would you give the Don Samuels contribution back now that he does represent one off? Here's the thing. I don't think that it is illegal before or after, but I would have – it raises eyebrows to me.
Right. I would have no problem. I wouldn't have taken it if he had given it to me after he was retained. And I think that's been the question that's been raised about it. But, you know, Derek, my campaign has been very transparent. In fact, we've reported the identity of every cent given to us in this campaign. And even if somebody made a contribution of $2, we've revealed it.
The law only requires you to make to identify people who make a contribution of $101, I believe, over $100.
That's correct. And my opponent has, according to her reports, she's received $31,000, which she has not identified the source of that money. Well, you know, Derek, one of the debates that we had last night happened before the Black Chamber. And these are some business people, and they are very astute in examining issues and problems when presented to them, because this was one of the matters that was discussed last night. And because we talked about transparency, and of course, if you're being transparent and if you're running for DA, why wouldn't you reveal the sources of the money? Well, and what she said last night is that money came from my current employees. And that's why she didn't reveal it, because if you revealed it, I would fire the employees. Well, we both know that that's crazy, because under federal law, state law, you can't fire people for political reasons. But this is what information that I've received from some of the members of that chamber is that receiving that money in that way is a violation of the law, because under Georgia law, there's something called the same source. If you receive donations from the same source, then in this case being the DA's office, you're required to reveal the identity of the people who are providing that money. So not only is it non-transparent, but it's also apparently illegal to receive the money from the same source, being the DA's office, and not report the people who are paying that money. And I just believe that in a race involving a position as important as the DA's, one should reveal the people who are giving you money, because you kind of get the feeling that maybe some of those folks were union members and some of those were Republicans that maybe you might not want us to know about.
Let's talk about the union, since you want to go there. This union has been very out front. They have selected their candidate, and you were not their candidate. The union has, we've seen United States Congressman Doug Collins rally with the union, say you ought to recuse yourself. You know, this is made all the way to the halls of Congress.
Yeah.
And the police union, I don't know if they were at the police headquarters, where they were at, but they saying that you need to get off of this case because you're playing absolute politics with it. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we want you to answer that.
Okay.
Has a motion to recuse you from this case been followed, and has there been a hearing set? What is the process? If there is going to be such a process. We ain't taking a call because we didn't take any yesterday, but we'll come back with more of comments from Paul Howard. A few more questions, then we can keep going and let you go. We'll be back in a moment. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK.
All right, Derek.
WALK, Paul Howard, the current DA, is our special guest. He's been gracious with his time. Paul, I forgot what I asked you before we went out to break. I'm having a senior moment.
Hey, man, I think we were talking about police unions.
Yeah, the police union. They chose your opponent over you, donated to her campaign. They've been very active. And that's what unions should do. If you got your candidate, then do what you do. And they made contributions to her campaign. Why don't they like Paul Howard?
Well, the reason they don't like Paul Howard is because Paul Howard prosecutes policemen. If you look at unions all across the country, Derek, what they do is they support DAs who don't prosecute them. And I would ask your listening audience to kind of do some research themselves. Look at the situation in Miami. Look at the situation in Los Angeles, Sacramento, California, Phoenix, Arizona, where the DAs are supported by unions. And in those communities, policemen don't get prosecuted. Probably the most obvious answer is Los Angeles, where since 2000, they've had over 1,800 shootings in Los Angeles, 1,800, and not one of those cases has been prosecuted. And in fact, this year, the police union has put $2.2 million in the DA's race. And so I want people to understand the significance of union involvement. There is a video of Fannie Willis accepting the endorsement of the police union. Derek, I don't know, have you gotten a chance to see that video?
I have not.
Well, I mentioned it last night because in the video, what she says is, in addressing the union, she says, "Your vision is my vision." That's what she said. When I brought it up last night, she actually called me a lie. In fact, I think she called me a lie three or four times. But if you listen to the video, it's there. That's what she said. And the reason I believe that she doesn't want to admit she said it is because the head of the Atlanta Police Union, whose name is Jason Segura, this is what he said, Derek, before she said, this is your vision is my vision. This officer was complaining about juveniles being allowed to be returned to their families. He said that that shouldn't be happening. Now, you know what is the opposite of that, and that is to put them in jail. He also went on to say that what we are looking for is progressive enforcement and progressive penalties for juveniles. And Derek, I think everyone understands what that means. That means we're talking about putting people in jail. And this situation with the unions has gotten to the point that the Los Angeles Times has written an editorial asking that prosecutors be barred from receiving endorsements and money and funding from unions. The DAs in California, they've asked their state board to bar it as well. And on last week, the president of the National Bar Association, the National Bar Association, as you know, that is the oldest black bar association in the country, asked the State Bar of Georgia to bar DAs and candidates from receiving money from police unions. And the National Bar was joined in that presentation by the NAACP and SCLC, the Rainbow Push Coalition, were also members of that same group. So this whole matter with the union has become really important because people understand that when they are involved with prosecutors, what happens is prosecutors don't prosecute policemen. The other significant thing that the union has done is that they have been able to influence states to pass policemen Bill of Rights laws. And I believe now they've gotten them passed in 16 states and in Georgia, shamefully, while Rayshard Brooks was being buried, his funeral was going on, while we were sitting there at Ebenezer, at the state capitol, they were passing one of the policeman Bill of Rights laws. It's Bill, I believe it's 838. It's sitting on the governor's desk right now. I hope the governor will veto it. I don't think that will happen. But it creates some laws that are very troublesome.
That allow the police to sue individuals and organizations if they characterize the, you know, their official duty, criticize it, or use their likeness in any way in the public kind of sphere.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
so
pretty
so
bad.
Derek, that means if you file a complaint against a police officer,
right,
and the police find that that complaint is not sustained, then the police can then turn around and sue you. Well, what's troublesome about that, Derek, is the union has got a lot of money to pay lawyers to sue citizens. It's a terrible bill. Yeah. The other thing, you know, it creates a new law called the intimidation of police officers. So by threatening them or saying certain things, you can be charged with a felony. Why is that significant to us? Because I believe, Portia Washington from the Atlanta Housewives, Portia Williams, I believe, went up to Kentucky to demonstrate in the Breonna Taylor case. Right. And guess what they got charged with?
Facing a felony until they downgraded it just a couple of days or so ago.
Yeah. And doing the same thing. And so the other thing that this bill does, it says that when a police officer is questioned, it has to be done by someone who has to give his rank, serial number, and et cetera. And what it seems to indicate is that the questioning has to be done by another law enforcement official. What that does in many circumstances is to eliminate the Citizens Review Committee. And as you know, the police unions across the country, they have been opposed to citizen review boards. they've been opposed to the kind of transparency that citizens have been calling for. So these are the folks who are opposing me. They have said from the very beginning, we don't want you to prosecute policemen no matter what happens. And I believe the DA's office should be independent. The DA ought to make decisions based on the evidence and not based upon what the police union dictates for him to do. It is particularly, I think, interesting to look at what has gone on in Miami. In Miami, there are three candidates who are running for district attorney. The longtime district attorney who had been supported by the union, she was asked by the Democratic Party in Miami 3 years ago to prosecute policemen because she had not prosecuted any. 3 years passed, and she still didn't prosecute any of them. And so the Democratic Party in Miami asked that she not seek reelection as district attorney. Well, what's so strange is, Derek, the union who had been supporting her, they said that they discovered that she had, in fact, prosecuted some policemen for drug charges or theft charges. And the union didn't appreciate that. So they withdrew their support for her. And they then turned to a third candidate who indicated that they would not prosecute any policemen at all. So this is a very serious matter. And I hope that our voters will perform their own research to see how detrimental it is when unions start interfering with prosecutors.
All right. When we come back, Paul, you made the statement that you prosecuted more police officers than any DA in the country, and others push back, including your opponent. That's just simply not true. We'll come back. Give us the evidence that it is. What's the number, and what are some of the cases? I think you mentioned a couple of them earlier.
Right.
But we go back to these 17 cases. What will it take to move those off of your desk, or are they just dead docketed because of reasons beyond your control?
We'll all right. To that. Be glad to talk about it.
Tell us that on the other side of the break.
All right.
I keep trying to get out of here, but I keep coming up with questions. We'll be back because I want people to hear the answers as early voting started on Monday. And the election will end on August 11th, the runoff. Whether you early vote, you can absentee vote. You can do like I did, early vote on Monday. It took me every bit of 5 minutes. And, you know, it is time to vote, and we're letting you hear the choices that you have. 404, and as it relates to the district attorney race. Look, we got to take a break. We'll be back in a moment with more from District Attorney Paul Howard on the other side of the break on News and Talk 1380 WFT. Time is done yet. Let's see what we left out. Paul?
Yeah. I believe we were going to talk about those 17 cases.
Yeah, 17 cases. I mean, yeah. What does it take to move those off of your desk?
Right.
Give us a snapshot of the cases. Some of these, and you can imagine that parents, I know some of these cases, as you know, going
right.
all the way back to the Corey Ward case. Many of
right.
them I have either been directly involved with, either reporting on them, talking about them. That you know, even when I think about Arison Waiters in Union City, my heart still breaks for that family.
Right.
And
as you know, we presented that case before the grand jury twice.
And they did not true bill it, I don't believe,
yeah.
if I remember correctly.
And so, Derek,
talk about the process. First of all, tell us what the process is, because people are just saying you are just lazy, you won't move
yeah.
the cases,
yeah.
it's political. Tell us so that people understand, because at the in every one of those files is somebody's loved one, somebody's son,
absolutely.
Or daughter is in that file. What
right.
assurances can you give them
well,
if you're reelected or whatever before
yeah.
you leave or whatever the case might be?
Well,
there's something that can happen for those cases.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, one of the things that that people might not know is six of those cases were scheduled for presentation with the grand jury that was convened. So what happens in our county is that when we get ready to present these police misconduct cases, because the presentations usually take quite a while, when I say quite a while, we might be talking about 1 or 2 days. So rather than presenting them before the regular grand jurors, we actually convene a second grand jury. And that grand jury was convened in this case. It would have been for the March-April term. And in fact, we had already presented one case before that grand jury, and then the fire struck. So that means the 6 other cases that we had scheduled, they were suspended until the virus is handled, and then we can come back to court. So that would have meant we would have been down to 11 cases, and those 11 cases would have been cases that would have occurred within 2019 and 2020. Now, involved in those 6 cases that we would have presented, the two cases that we are really proud of, and one of them is the Jamarion Robinson case that happened on the 5th of August of 2016. The thing that is unusual about the case, that it involved the U.S. Marshals Task Force. Mm-hmm. And Derek, I don't know if you know anything about that task force
I'm
group.
I'm familiar with it.
But,
when
they shoot somebody,
they don't have any body cams.
No dash cams. There were 16 officers from 8 different jurisdictions. No body cam, no dash cam. The only video that we received is a video made from one of the condo residents
that showed
the outside of the incident. So what we've been trying to get from the federal government is the investigative report that they would have conducted in this case and any other statements or evidence. They were very uncooperative in doing that.
Have you received any file? I remember when the case came up. Did they forward you any files? I know you're trying to sue the federal government.
Because it's their investigative files, and
this is the FBI, U.S. Attorney's Office. In whose office does it reside?
And it resides with the U.S. Attorney's Office. And, Derek, we had to sue them just to get certain documents from them, and they have been passing those documents to us, and that lawsuit is still pending because we still haven't resolved some of those issues. One of the main things that happened is the Justice Department instructed these police officers that they did not have to talk with the DA's office.
Now, remind everybody, because I think it's important, the Atlanta Police Department loaned officers to this federal task force.
Correct.
While that officer is there, he is really, for lack of a better word, deputized to be a federal agent.
That's correct.
And therefore, they're under the federal guidelines. And because of this, the mayor took the extraordinary step to say we will no longer, because of this death in this case, we will no longer allow our officers to participate in these federal raids because you all will not let our officers wear the Atlanta body cams, and
Absolutely.
We require that as a source of information, checks and balance for both the officer and the citizen. And if you all are saying that is not possible, we would not have our officers participate. Is this the same case?
This is the same case. And Derek, we met with the Mayor Bottoms and presented to her the facts of this case. What we also did is in February of 2018, we had a visit with Congressman John Lewis, a visit that I will never forget. But without going into all of the details, Congressman Lewis agreed at that time to initiate a congressional investigation of the U.S. Marshals. He also agreed that he would work with us to start a nationwide campaign to require police officers to wear body-worn cameras and use dash cam in their cars. And you know that subsequent to that, John I had some major health problems, so it never really took flight. But we were able to, we asked Representative, our Congressman Hank Johnson, and Hank Johnson has now taken on the mantle of the promises made by John Lewis. And Hank was about to hold a meeting of public officials and elected officials in Fulton County to talk about this case and the Jimmy Acheson case, because there's another real important component, and I know this is something that you're familiar with, and that is the sovereign immunity and the qualified immunity, because that immunity affects any civil settlement that might be received as well. Because one thing that people have to understand is with the criminal matter, what the federal government has done in every case involving local officers is that the federal government has moved to transfer the case to federal court. And when the case gets to federal court, their actions are described as federal actions, and these officers never face any criminal responsibility. At the same time, the immunity, the qualified immunity, is provided to the families of the victims, so that excludes them from receiving any kind of settlement, and that's what has happened in the Jamarion Robinson case. But one of the reasons that they don't receive any kind of civil settlement is that the local authorities, like the city of Atlanta, like Fulton County, they file motions asking that the matters be dismissed towards them. And what Hank Johnson was about to do before the virus is to ask those local jurisdictions not to do that, so that the Robinson family could, in fact, receive some kind of settlement from the federal government. So we were really proud of where we are. We're trying to get this national investigation of the U.S. Marshals. And the reason we wanted to do it is because we found out that, like Jamarion Robinson, the U.S. Marshals were responsible for 135 deaths since 2015, 135. And that's why John Lewis had agreed to initiate the federal investigation of the U.S. Marshals Service. And so that was the first case we had planned to present. We had planned to present the Jimmy Acheson case. And again, in Jimmy Acheson, no dash cam, no body cam, but we were able to retain an outstanding expert who has been able to recreate the scene of the crime. And even though none of the police officers who were involved in that shooting will speak to us, they refused to talk to the DA's office, we were prepared to move forward. And so, no, we are not just dead pocketing or forgetting those cases. We have actively worked on those cases. We plan to present them, and we believe that they'll be indicted, and we'll get a chance to present them before a trial jury here in Fulton County.
All right, Dom, we ain't got but a few minutes. You stayed the whole time limit, as you said you would. We'll come back, Paul, one or the other. Comments, they're saying, look, Paul Howard's under investigation. He's enriched himself illegally through a nonprofit organization. We want you to answer that. And then we'll let you make your closing argument as to why people should go to the polls and vote for you over the other person in this race. We'll do that on the other side of the break. Don't go into place. It's Paul Howard, again, the district attorney, and embroiling what is a very tight battle to retain his office. Early voting started on Monday. You can vote all the way up until a couple of days before the 11th. And we keep reminding you, voting is fundamental and integral to the democracy we live in. We'll be back. It's News and Talk 1380 WLK. They said that you have illegally enriched yourself through a nonprofit organization, and have you done anything, and you're on investigation, and have you done anything illegal?
Derek, absolutely not. First of all, I want to thank you so much for having me on to give me a chance to answer directly some of these questions. And so what I did, and as I've said this repeatedly during this campaign, whatever process is used to look into this matter, I'm sure that at the end I will be completely exonerated because this is what happened. In 2014, I discovered that I was the seventh highest paid DA in the state. There were seven other DAs who were receiving salaries larger than the Fulton County DA. These DAs were in jurisdictions that were much smaller. And the way that they were able to do it is they were able to negotiate salaries with their locales, their counties or their municipalities. So what I did is I asked the chief of our appellate division to give me an opinion to tell me whether or not it was authorized for the city of Atlanta to pay me a supplement. The lawyer wrote the opinion, and it said that I had the right to receive it from a municipality like the city of Atlanta. And I'd like to add that that lawyer is now a full County Superior Court. So I wrote then a 12-page presentation of a salary, and I presented it to the president of city council, who was Caesar Mitchell at the time, and the chairman of the public safety committee for the city council of Atlanta, who was C.T. Martin. And I also presented it to the mayor, and who was Kasim Reed. And they agreed that it was appropriate for me to receive the compensation from the city of Atlanta. It was presented before the city council, and it was approved unanimously, 14-0. Derek, one of the things that is so strange, I actually, after they approved it and they sent the compensation to me, I wrote the city of Atlanta back a letter thanking them for it, wrote it to the city, to the mayor, and actually pointed out in the letter that the compensation would be administered by the nonprofit. So what the version has been tried to pushed upon the public is I somehow took money that was slated for the nonprofit. That is not true. The money was approved by the persons that I've mentioned after a legitimate request for a salary raise. It was a nonprofit that had been in operation since 2004, a nonprofit that I put together that we had been operating in our in the DA's office. And I can tell you, not one penny meant for anyone else, any children, anyone else in our county was ever taken or misappropriated by me. And so that's why I feel whatever investigative process is used at the end, I'm totally vindicated. So what I want to ask people to do, when I look out at what is going on in our community now, see this virus that's causing so many people harm. We've had so many deaths, and my heart really goes out to those folks. But I think it's clear that if our national leadership had been better, that we would not be in the place that we are now. And that's what I bring to this community. I bring experienced, innovative leadership, the ability to solve big problems. Solved it with the murder rate and the violence rate in our communities with people in Fulton County Jail. And I believe...
I don't know if you're able to... You sound like you moved again because you're going in and out, and I want people to okay. be able to hear the last... We got about 3-4 more minutes.
I got you.
And I don't want
well,
you to
I wanted to say that I've
Here's
already...
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a closing argument as to why people should support you, vote for you.
Right.
Then I want you to give people a website if people want to volunteer for your campaign, if they want to donate to your campaign, how can they reach or connect with you
right.
On the run-up to the election and while early voting is still going?
Well, the thing that I want to say to people that I realize that there are some changes going on in this country regarding police brutality and policing in our communities. And that is why I have decided to add a third prong, and I mentioned as we started this interview, the two prongs in our office, one holding people responsible, secondly, the one that I created, making our community safer, and now we're going to add a third one, and that is ending police brutality and police reform. We're going to work both locally and nationally to get that done. This is a big task, and I believe that you need someone who is experienced in making big changes. And I'm the person who can do that, and I would ask you to vote for Paul Howard. Our website is reelectpaulhoward.com, and I would ask you to please go to that website. You can read more specific information about me. You can also become a part of our campaign, and you can also donate. And that's real important because we're fighting against police unions and Trump Republicans with unlimited resources. So we could certainly use your help, and we could use your donations as well. And let me give you that website again. It's dapaulhoward.com. dapaulhoward.com, and we would really, really, really like to hear from you. I believe there is no person who can make this community safer that will make you feel safer based upon what I've done these past 23 years, and I look forward to continue to serve the people in our county. And Derek, thank you so much for having me here today to give me an opportunity to talk to the people of this community and to talk with them directly.
Paul Howard, let me say we appreciate you. You sit in the chair. You answered the tough questions. We went over every area of what people had raised. They can research you. They can go draw their own conclusions. But I appreciate you for taking the time and being here for the full balance of 2 hours to talk about yourself, the controversies in your campaign, the things you see that are going well. All the best to you, man, and good luck in re-election, all right?
All right. Thank you, my brother.
All right, look, that's going to do it for us. I'm out of time. And so, again, you have two opportunities. You got the early vote. You can absentee vote, or you can vote.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.